What is your strategy when you get to your favorite fishing spot and the parking lot is packed? What if you're floating a river and you find that you have boats in front of you most of the day and there's just pressure all around you? Today, we are going to get some tips on how to prepare for fishing pressured waters, and we go behind the scenes with TFO, with a guy who is behind product development. This is the Wet Fly Swing Podcast, where I show you the best places to travel to for fly fishing, how to find the best resources and tools to prepare for that trip, and what you can do to give back to the fish species you love. Hey, I'm Dave, host of the Wet Fly Swing Podcast. I've been fly fishing since I was a little kid. I grew up in a little fly shop and have created one of the largest fly fishing podcasts in this country. I've also interviewed more of the greatest fly anglers than just about anyone in the world. Nick Conklin today is here to share an update on Temple Fork Outfitters and some tips on choosing the right rod for your next trip, next species. You're going to find out why going to local shows is important, so you can find out which rods you need and you can cast the rods to get a better feel for those. You're going to find out what options you should be thinking about if you're on a budget, and why their big game rods have an overextended fighting butt, and it's not all for the fight. Plus, you're going to get Nick's three big tips on fishing pressured waters from the guy who has the aforementioned book with the same name coming out this year. Always love getting an update on a rod company, especially when I've been using that rod company for most of my adult life. Okay, let's do it. Nick Conklin from TFORods.com. How you doing, Nick?
Doing very well, Dave. How are you this morning?
Awesome. Great to be putting this one together. We've done a couple of TFO at least episodes over the years. I think more than a couple, and it's a pretty cool story. I think for those that don't know TFO, the history, Lefty Cray is sprinkled in there, and there's just kind of a cool. We've heard that story, and we've even had the founder on and all of that. But today we're going to get a little update on TFO because it's been a little while on kind of products and your lineup and things like that, and also talk about this book you have coming out, which I think is going to be huge because helping people fish pressured waters is always, is always helpful and, and a challenge. So before we jump into all that, let's bring it back to fly fishing real quick. How'd you get into it? What's your first memory?
Yeah. So, first memory in general of fishing is going out on the dock and got the, the Snoopy pole and the red and white bobber and doing the worm fishing deal. And I was fairly lucky. I grew up in Michigan. We had a summer place. It was about a 70-acre private lake, and behind it was a branch of the Pure Marquette River.
Oh, wow.
In northern Michigan. So I got a lot of opportunities growing up to fish, bass, panfish, everything in the lake, but then also go really learn how to fish a small stream, rainbows, brown trout, things like that. And did a lot of conventional tackle fishing growing up and still do, but I would say I got serious about the fly fishing game when I was about 8. Read an Ernest Hemingway story and started to just delve into all the books and VHS tapes at the time, right?
Oh, wow.
That's yeah. How a lot of us learned how to cast a fly rod and tie flies and do all that deal. So grew up in that part of Michigan and had a lot of fishing opportunities. And I've been in Dallas, Texas now about 12 years. So made that move a few years ago. And
Wow.
Exploring all the Texas coast and places around the world. So
amazing. What's the change from Michigan down to Dallas? Is there much of a difference in kind of just the, I know the area is different, but the people, the places, all that stuff.
Oh, people, weather, one of the big things. When I was in college, I ended up doing a couple of internships down here for an outdoor newspaper. And one of the big reasons I wanted to come back was the weather and the food. People are incredibly nice. They just have a little different vibe and energy than Northerners. No offense to my Yankee friends and family, but a little different energy and vibe. Fishing opportunities as well. Said growing up in Michigan, it would be hard. You'd be hard pressed to go 5 or 10 minutes in any direction and not find fishable water. Have to go a little bit farther here, but you've got the salt water. You've got a ton of freshwater opportunities. So you've got all those outdoor opportunities that are very, very cool.
That's right. And did you make the trip or the move down before because of TFO?
Not initially, no. So I was working my way through college doing the outdoor journalism deal. That's what I got my degree in.
Gotcha.
Like I said, around that time I started fly fishing, I kind of made that decision that I was going to be somehow involved in the writing aspect of things, but also the fishing side of things. So I was freelancing for a couple magazines, did some work for Field & Stream, The Drake, and worked at a handful of newspapers. And unfortunately, that prospect, that future wasn't so bright. It was it was fun and easy to do when you were still in college, right? You could cash a couple checks, right?
Yeah.
Publish a few articles throughout the year and make a little bit of money. But as a professional, when I had to pay all my own bills and fund my lifestyle, a little difficult.
Yeah.
So I started reaching out to different members of the industry and applying kind of more on the manufacturing product side of things, and got a lot of ignored emails, got a few responses. And one of the very few legitimate responses was from Rick Pope, the founder, still chairman there at TFO at the time.
Yeah.
And you know, he was not hesitant, but you know, who's this kid from Michigan? Never heard of him. He's never really worked in the fishing industry side of things. So the deal was, you know, I got a job at a newspaper over here in Fort Worth. He's like, well, if you make your way back down here, you know, give me a call and come over to the warehouse and we'll do an interview. So again, ended up getting a full-time job here in Fort Worth, and I had worked at Outdoor Newspaper I had worked for previously. He knew the owner pretty well. So there was a little bit of awareness, but still, again,
yeah,
a kid from middle of nowhere, Michigan, wanting to get involved. So I ended up, after meeting him and spending a couple hours in the warehouse interviewing with everybody at the time, all the partners and office folks and warehouse guys, I ended up doing some part-time work there. So I'd go work at the newspaper 5 p.m. till about 1 or 2 in the morning, hop on the train at the time, take the train over to Dallas and work in the warehouse warranty department from 9 a.m. to about 3 p.m. So I did that for half a year or so before he brought me on full time. And he said, I started in parts and service warranty department and moved into shipping and moved into the office. And I kind of joke, outside of hardcore HR or accounts receivable, I've done just about everything there.
Right. 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 That's awesome. And what is your current role now? What is it there?
Yep. So my current role, I'm the product category manager. So that essentially it entails everything on the fly fishing side, from initial product design development. I work a lot with our sales reps, domestic, international accounts, our national advisors, you know, people like Jason Randall.
Yeah.
Formerly the Flip Pal at Blaine Chalk with those folks. Product side, I handle all the fly fishing products relative to TFO. Then I also run our trade shows, consumer shows, which is a big part of our marketing arm side of things. Excuse me.
Yeah.
So I spent a lot of my year on the road working with dealers, working with reps out in front of consumers and sharing products.
Right. Right. That's it. We're going to talk a little about those products today. You know, I think that's going to be awesome to kind of get caught up on things. And, you know, there's always, I think, you know, new people coming in, or, you know, and the cool thing is about TFO is you guys have a little mix, right? You have kind of the conventional and the fly. Is that something that there's another person kind of in that role with the conventional side doing the same thing you do?
Absolutely. Yep. So my counterpart, Jim Shulin, handles our conventional tackle. I'm on that side of things. We've really grown it pretty aggressively in the 12 or so years I've been here. But we do everything from a small 5.5-foot trout panfish rod up to a 50-pound class boat rod. A lot of freshwater, saltwater mixtures in there. Really been an interesting market to follow. Like I said, I personally enjoy it, and I fish a lot of conventional tackle, do a lot of surf stuff and offshore fishing. I'm not personally involved, but I get to play with a lot of the prototypes and offer my suggestions over on that side. So it's definitely helped to be able to grow both the fly and the conventional side at the same time and really get into a lot of shops and get in front of a lot of customers.
Yeah, definitely. Nice. And is it like with the, just roughly, you always think, you know, you hear the conventional is so much bigger. Is it kind of like a 10-to-1 sort of thing on size of the, I guess it probably varies a little bit, but is that kind of something like that?
Definitely varies. Relative to TFO, we're still known as a fly brand. So we skew a little heavier towards that.
Yeah.
That awareness and that dealer look, you know, that dealer placement. Conventional tech world is a tough one. There's a lot of good strong competitors out there, and it's a growth thing. You know, we've been doing fly rods now almost 25 years.
Oh, right. Yeah. Yep.
The conventional rods about 15, maybe a little bit longer.
Gotcha.
So it, you know, it's like anything, it just takes a while to grow it. And I think one of the benefits of that is we've got such strong brand awareness and great customer service and turnaround times on warranties that it's definitely helped the conventional tackle get going
right
a little bit more quickly than if we didn't have that other component to it.
Gotcha. Wow. And so on Jason Randall, maybe let's go down that track. We did this Driftless. Well, we're doing it this September late. We're heading out there with Driftless Angler, Jason Randall. We're going to be focusing on like dry fly fishing. But I know Jason's also known for his kind of nymphing and stuff like that. What was the project you worked with Jason on?
Yep. So we've got that in the final stages of prototyping. It'll be released this summer. But we've worked together on two other rods. The first was our Drift series, which was a unique project, kind of a multi-purpose rod, right? Everything from a 9-foot three-weight dry fly rod up to a 12-foot three-inch, you know, micro spay, trout spay type of rod, with some nymphing rods in between, 10 and 11 footer. A multi-piece rod, like I said, comes with a couple different fighting butts, kind of a do-it-all type of rod. And that was really our first foray, our first entry into, you know, what is a Euro nymph rod? What is a high stick rod? And learning that marketplace. Since then, we've moved into the Stealth series, which is much more dedicated, much more technical high stick style of rod. We've got two rods in that family. Now we're working on a kind of a higher end, more expansive Euro nymph specific rod series, a little bit faster, a little bit lighter. Got some pretty trick components on it and handle designs and things. So Jason and I, we've been working on that almost 2 years.
Wow.
Some of our rod projects take a little bit longer, but you know, Jason's a great friend and a great mentor and really been a fun guy over the last, 6 or 7 years since he's come on to these projects. And, you know, we probably spend more time together in the spring on the road than I do with my own girlfriend. So,
you do. That's a good guy to hang out with, though, isn't he? He's a funny guy.
Oh, absolutely. He's a great time. And again, really fun to work on rod projects with.
Nice. So that's kind of the Euro stuff going on. And then I'm just, you know, kind of curious on the spay. Has that been, I've heard there's been some, maybe spay isn't quite as popular, or maybe, do you guys see the trends? I'm sure you're looking at some of that. Do you guys see that trend a little bit too, where spay maybe isn't as popular, or are you guys still selling lots of those?
It depends regionally. You know, it's one of the unfortunate things about the whole, you know, I prefer to call it a two-handed rod or a double-handed rod, right?
Yeah.
You get to that spay switch terminology, and for whatever reason, they try to make it more difficult than it should be.
Yeah.
I think, unfortunately, that kind of, not kind of, it does confuse people and it makes it just more difficult to get into. And there's a larger barrier to entry there. And that's a frustrating thing. You know, we've seen it trend more towards that lighter trout spay, micro spay, lighter two-handed game. A lot of the traditional trout folks are kind of getting tired of throwing those 7 and 8 weights all day on big heavy flies and sinking lines, and have found the longer, lighter two-handed rods to really be an efficient way to maneuver that line. And as you see some more surf type applications or something like a pyramid lake, right, where people can two-handed overhead cast much more efficiently.
Oh, right.
So, you know, it goes up and down. It's something I'm gonna really believe is going to continue to grow as, unfortunately, people learn. Yeah, you know, a lot of those bad casting habits and issues continue to flare up and they just can't pick up reposition line as effectively anymore. Outside of those benefits, I think it's just a really fun way to cast and a different way to present a fly. So
yeah, it is. Yeah, no, I think it seems like for us, we got a large spay or a two-handed rod contingent, you know, just because of the steelhead Atlantic salmon stuff. So yeah, I think it's going to keep going. But
absolutely, and it's, you know, unfortunately, it's one of those things that's been kind of tethered to the environment, to the conditions.
Yeah,
you know, as steelhead salmon populations have gone down in the Pacific Northwest, you know, you see a dip in that type of rod interest. Thankfully, you still have got the Great Lakes, and not to get into a argument or conversation there. It's still a fish population, and people are finding ways to effectively fish a two-handed rod there. And as the trout anglers start to transition a little bit and find another fun tool, something else fun to play with, there's some good growth opportunities there, but we just have to fight our way through the confusing verbiage and things like that to unfortunately prohibit some people from getting involved in it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. No, I think we do a trip. We've been doing a trip every year out to the Great Lakes with Jeff Liskey and Rick Kustich. So we love definitely the Great Lakes steelhead stuff is awesome. I mean, it's pretty, we've had pretty epic trips out there. You know, there's definitely lots of fish, you know, and it's been working pretty well, but,
lots of fish and it's somewhat sustainable and,
yep.
You know, it's great. People like Jeff that can explain it and break it down simply to people and have that passion to say, you know, it doesn't have to be this complicated. Here's a really efficient, also fun way to fish this type of water and have success. So.
Yeah, exactly. Nice. What is, you know, just looking at your lineup a little bit, we probably won't cover everything, but I know, and you guys have, I mean, pretty much looks like everything, right? You got in some combos. We've been getting some new people coming into the podcast and, you know, as far as somebody new to it, right? What's like the package thing, like the NXT kind of black label, what do you recommend for somebody who's brand new? They don't know anything about their, you know, just learning fly fishing. What do you tell that person?
I mean, that's absolutely the way to go. Start off with a combo kit. whether it's a TFL NXT Black Label kit or a good quality combo kit that fits your budget to start. You know, one of the unfortunate things is people feel like they have to spend a bunch of money right away, and they may or may not get put into a rod, right, where they can cast, they can feel it load, and they actually enjoy using it. And they have thrown it in the back of the closet, right, and never pick it up again.
So right.
You got to kind of understand, one, what is your reasonable budget? Two, what do you think you're going to do the most? We still get a lot of those questions, and they're great questions because they're new anglers, right?
Yeah.
They're curious. They want to know, you know, well, we've got a 5-weight and an 8-weight. Well, can I bass fish, trout fish with my 5-weight, but I also want something to go catch a steelhead with or catch a redfish with? Well, you kind of got to split it up, right?
Yeah.
Well, 5-weight can do a lot, can't do everything.
No.
But, you know, for most people here in the States that want a freshwater fish, some form or fashion, little 8.5-foot 4-weight or a 9-foot 5-weight is a great way to start. Again, combo kits are a little easier way to get into it, right? Because most of them are specifically comes with a reel we put backing, fly line, and a leader on it. So, right, you have essentially everything you need minus some flies, and you don't have to go down those rabbit holes of trying to understand what line you need, what reel you need, and piecing everything together can be a little bit daunting to start.
Yeah, it is.
And fly lines are very inexpensive these days, but, you know, that's a function of their quality and their performance. And you know, we put a what we call our just a little combo kit line on there. So if you wanted to take it out, cast it in the driveway, cast it on the lawn, you know, you don't have to be worried about tearing up a expensive, nice fly line. So again, trying to make it easy for people to get into it, keep it reasonably priced, still provide quality tackle that they can grow into and can continue to use beyond those, you know, those initial weeks and months of just learning to cast, understanding what you need to do to unroll a fly line and deliver a fly.
Trout Routes is the most comprehensive mapping app for trout anglers. With over 50,000 trout streams, 350,000 access points, public land maps, and more, Trout Routes is the number one resource for navigating, researching, and exploring trout streams. You can download Trout Routes for free in the App Store today. Just search for Trout Routes on your phone and take your exploration to the next level. That's Trout Routes, TROUTROUTES. Are you ready to elevate your fly fishing adventures but unsure where to start? Look no further than Guidebook, the premier platform for connecting you with the finest fly fishing guides in the country. Make your way to wetflyswing.com/guidebook and start planning your next unforgettable fly fishing journey right now. Let's transform your passion into extraordinary experiences with the guidance of Guidebook. And what do you think is the best advice on that as far as if somebody, again, let's just take it to that brand new person. They're sitting there. Okay, we got a rod. What's the next step? What do you think is the best way to get somebody into? Because I think casting is one of those barriers, right?
Oh, casting can be a barrier because it seems a lot more difficult. But, you know, one of the things I always say, especially when talking with someone that comes from the conventional tackle world, right? Spinning or casting. All right, your weight's in this lure. Could be 1 or 2 inches, whatever the length. So you can have a little bit more compact, aggressive stroke. Fly casting, right? Your weight's that 30 to 40 feet, whatever your head is of the fly line. Be a little bit more, you know, delayed, a little bit more graceful in your approach. But once once someone picks up a rod, picks up a reel, goes through that process, it's going out and finding a qualified educator, someone that can help kind of guide you through the process.
Yeah.
You know, one of the great things about local fly shops is there is a lot of folks that guide and cast and can help guide somebody through that process. While digital resources can be great, there's still that in-person component I think is pretty valuable.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, finding some local clubs, things like that, right?
Can be
instrumental in helping somebody evolve through the process. And I always try to remind people it's a process that evolves, right?
Yeah.
How I cast a fly rod 15 years ago versus 10 years ago versus 5 years ago versus now is definitely different and something that should evolve as you work through this sport.
That's awesome. Yeah, no, I think the local groups, the fly shop, I mean, those are two awesome resources. If you don't have a fly shop in your area, maybe there's a local group, you can Google search, you know, your area, your state, whatever, and start there. And yeah, I think that's a huge part of it. I think, you know, getting a guide for sure, that's a tip we hear a lot of. I mean, it costs some money, but I think once you get started, if you want to, you know, level the learning curve a little bit, right, or a lot, that's a good investment. Would you say like paying a guide $500 or whatever it is a smart move?
It'll pay off in a lot of ways outside of just some of your initial casting work. And I mean, but if you're going to be fishing specific types of water, I mean, what a great way to sit and learn it and understand and app, you know, and ask questions. I think, you know, one of the unfortunate things is not enough questions get asked on a day, during a day on the river. And, you know, guides have been doing this for most of their lives, right? They want to share that information. They want to help explain why they do certain things and when do they do it. So there's definitely a lot of value to spending that time and, you know, be open about it too, right? If you want to book a guide, say, you know, I'm just starting. This is what I want to do. I may not care about catching fish, but I want to understand how to cast and how to cast specific to this water we're going to be on. So I think there's some value to asking those hard questions and, you know, being honest about your limitations and your expectations is a big thing. And I think folks would be surprised how much more guides and casting instructors and even company people will open up and share when, you know, there's some good quality back and forth, right? There's some honest questions being there.
Yeah. Yeah. Nice. Well, we're going to talk a little on the TFO kind of lineup, I think a little bit later here, but let's jump into something. I don't want to miss your book that's coming out because I think that is really, it sounds like a great topic that you're covering. So maybe give us again, what is the title of the book and when do you expect that to be out?
Yep. So the working title is Fly Fishing Pressured Western Rivers. It's slated to be out at the end of 2024. I've been working with a longtime friend, longtime industry colleague on this project. And the idea kind of came about. We were sitting up at his place in Montana and watching 40, 50 drift boats float down the stretch of the Madison River. And everyone was pretty much doing the same thing, fishing the same way. Boats were taking essentially the same lanes and people were having marginal success. And we thought, you know, there's got to be a different way to talk about this, right? Western rivers, it's just, this is a case example we're using now, getting more and more pressured, right?
Yeah.
Especially since COVID, more and more people are moving up there, more and more people got into the sport, which is great. But with that increase in involvement comes just more pressure on the rivers, more pressure on the fish. Unfortunately, as environmental conditions continue to fluctuate and there's a lot of other things hammering these resources, it's only going to become more and more difficult. And in our approach, what we've always been saying since the start is, well, instead of being negative, instead of complaining about people, you know, fishing your water, quote unquote, why don't we share some techniques and some tips, some ways to approach it so you could be a little bit more effective, which more effective results in a little bit more fun, right?
Mm-hmm.
But fishing in front of and behind other anglers, both the wading aspect of it, but also if you're floating, because a lot of people drift boats and rafts once COVID hammered us all. There's that element where there's ways to be effective, there's ways to be successful, but have some fun and approach it a little bit differently. And it's supposed to be a leisure time activity, should be fun for people. So
yeah,
trying to keep a positive mental approach here.
Definitely. And is that, well, maybe let's just start there. If you thought of three things that, you know, somebody can think about here, like where do they start? What are a few tips on if you're fishing pressure water? Either somebody, maybe there's just a bunch of people on the river, they've already fished through the water, or there's a boats in front of you. What are you thinking about?
Yeah, so we actually take a step back before you even get to the water. Focus a lot on your preparation, your packing, how you organize your gear, cover a lot on the casting. Not so specific of how to be a better caster, but how to practice certain things and how to show up to the river, show up to the guide trip, ready to go. I think one of the biggest failures sounds negative. One of the biggest issues is people throw all their gear in the truck, run down to the river, and you know, you spend first couple hundred yards of your float day working on your cast and tangling flies and untangling flies. And there's a lot of that wasted time that everyone does, but there's some ways to approach it beforehand, right? Go to the park, practice your casting, go through all your gear, know where your flies are, know where your leader, your tippet, everything is. Really, you refine your gear and refine your approach before you hit the water.
Mm-hmm.
Then, you know, once you get on the river, spend some time actually watching other people. Yeah, I think as we kind of step back to talk about the casting component, I think there's a lot of value to watching other people cast and watching how other people approach it. Same as if you had somebody watch your casting stroke, right? Having that second set of eyes really, to me, brings a lot of value. And you can really highlight some positive things, but also some of the hiccups in your cast. No different than watching somebody fish a pool or a run or a bunch of riffles, right? How do they approach it, right? Do they walk right to the prime cherry water they've always had success? Or do they start up high, start up low, right? So there's that element of watching others first. You know, I mentioned the drift boat thing. Well, everyone's taking the same lane. Why is everyone running the same lane? Is it a safety issue? Or is this is where they've always had success and they're figuring out the abilities, the aptitude of the angler in the front of the boat, and this is the best place to put them. So, you know, analyzing where people wave and how people float is a key component. Just being a little bit more open, right? Seasonally, time of day, weather conditions. I just got done actually doing some edits. We did some hard edits on fishing what we call the off hours, off times, that may not be as crowded, as popular. There's some benefit to being a little bit more flexible there. So again, preparation's a big key, doing some of the work beforehand. Then when the trip is over, the season's over, doing that follow-up work, which I know isn't always easy. People want to stash their gear and forget about their notes, but there's value to making some hard notes, understanding what worked, when it worked, where it worked.
Yep.
Going through the gear, going through the tackle, and again, kind of setting yourself up for the next season or the next trip to be successful and be prepared.
Right. And this is kind of the journaling things. So if you take some notes while you're out there, and then at the end, kind of look through those notes and make sure you know for the next trip.
Take some legitimate notes and follow up on them. I mean, it's like going back to school, doing your homework and understanding again what worked, when it worked, why it didn't work, and read those notes again before the next spring or for the next fall, whatever your season's going to be.
Yeah. What do you do when you're taking notes? What's your field book and all that stuff look like? Do you have like a piece of paper, or do you have a journal? How do you do it?
Unfortunately, I'm so neurotic, I send myself a million emails. I'll be up in the middle of the night,
right,
sending myself a little email list. You know, I do the Apple Notes thing on my phone, or the iPhone Notes thing, but it really comes down to preparation, right? Was I finding myself in need of this fly? Did I have too many of these flies? You know, just constantly a running train of notes and comments about really my personal performance. I do take notes on conditions and different things like that, but I focus more, and I still try to focus more on what did I do that either worked or didn't work? Did I emphasize one thing over the other? Did I approach water a little bit differently? So some of those simple notes, I think they can go a long way and good reminders for the next, before the next season or before the next trip.
Right. So that is a good reminder. And so you're all digital pretty much, no paper for you out there.
No, I still do. I'm sitting here looking at my yellow legal pad of notes. So that's just my task to do this week. And I've got a desk drawer full of, all right, I fished Montana this time of year. This is what I did. This is what worked. Or I fished Colorado, or, you know, I'm starting to go through my Gulf Coast notes right now as we get off of the horrible wind patterns down here, and I start heading out to do my surf stuff and going through all my notes. You know, even how do I rig my truck, or, you know, do I have to put new braid on a spinning reel, whatever I got to do, right? So it's just those notes, those reminders I think are valuable, and unfortunately one of those things that don't come up till you're in the middle of the river or you're on the water, and I forgot this, or I ran into the same issue last year, but now it's come back up and I didn't do anything to mitigate this problem.
Right. Cool. So those are some, definitely, it sounds like preparation and just kind of preparing for the trip is as big as when you're on the water, you know, as far as the pressure. Any other things you'd throw out there as far as, you know, helping somebody if they're, you know, fishing a run? I always go back to the Colorado stuff, some of those waters, you know, you hear about that are super, or even some of these other areas around the country that are really pressured. Maybe there's multiple people going through a run. What do you do when you see that? If there's a bunch of people, you come on the river and there's already 20 cars at the place you're fishing, and you know people have fished through it, what are you thinking about when you see that?
You know, there's going back to just watching how other people have fished it. I think there's a lot of value to understanding the type of flies. And most of those cars are probably going to fish the same type of setup.
Mm.
Could be as simple as an indicator rig and two flies, right?
Yep.
Kind of a neutral pairs of your stonefly type of deal, or zebra midge, something like that. So I think there's value to understanding what they're fishing, and there's times when you could either upsize or downsize. And this is it's a creative time you can play around with something and maybe try something a little bit different that most people won't always have that type of creativity or flexibility, right? Because they've had success here fishing this. They see the amount of cars, you know, trucks in the parking lot, and think, all right, I really have to be sharp. Okay, well, being creative with your flies is one thing, but also just really refining your fly placement. I mean, name a place you fished where I'm sure a bunch of people have fished through it, and the key to success is how those flies sink and where they're placed, right? So, and that kind of goes back to your preparation and practicing and understanding that, you know, there's a need to move too. Just as a small example, Jason and I were doing a class up in Colorado, outside Colorado Springs, and fishing some pretty pressured water with a couple folks. And, you know, it was the middle of the day, the sun was up, some really sharp anglers work through these runs, these little, I shouldn't say runs, more pocket water. And,
yeah.
You know, one of them kept coming back to me and saying, well, what am I doing wrong? So you're not doing anything wrong. It's just, it's not happening right now, right? Make a mental note of this section of river, come back to it in a couple hours, right? The ability to, one, move through water quickly and understand if it's happening, fish are there or not, but also the ability to remember to come back, I think gets kind of forgotten in that rush of activity. People will fish through a section of river, certain time of day, never come back to them. Well, you know, as temperatures change, as conditions change, light changes, there's some value to coming back to it. And even though that water was, you know, beaten to a pulp at the beginning of the day, doesn't mean that late afternoon, even in the nighttime, it's not a good chance for fish to move up and become active again.
Right. As conditions change, that makes sense.
And again, it's a positive thing. It's a mental attitude. All right. Yeah. Certain times of the year, certain rivers are going to be crowded, but that's something that's going to deter you or turn you off. And maybe fishing's not your sport. I hate to say it that way, but you know, this is supposed to be fun activity, right? And you got to try to keep a good mental positive attitude as best as you can.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Well, as I'm thinking here, I'm, you know, because we've been talking to some people new to it, and I'm always thinking about that. How do you get that new person, you know, in where they're kind of hooked, right? And I think it's catching fish is a big part of it, like getting some action, which is not, you know, for a new person, you know, what's your tip there for somebody who's new, kind of a beginner? How do they, we talked about, you know, getting some help on the casting, but when they're on the water, what do you think is the best advice for that person to, you know, to have success?
You know, the simplest, easiest advice is just to get out there and do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're going to flail around. You're going to lose flies. You're going to tangle stuff. You'll probably throw your back cast into the trees, but there's an element to, you know, you've chose this as a sport, something as a fun activity, right? A leisure time activity, and try not to let the crowds and the people and some of the little frustrations get you down. You want to be out here, and again, you're going to flail around and make some mistakes, but when you do hook that first fish, as you know, right, you'll be onto it.
Yeah.
So you'll be into it, and then the real fun starts, where you're digging all kinds of other techniques and traveling all around and, you know, watching YouTube videos, reading books, and doing all that. So it's a slippery slope, but it's a fun slippery slope once you hook into that first fish.
Yeah, and I think the people, part of, you know, one tip too is, you know, we've heard a lot about is just getting out and, you know, hiking, right? If there's some pressure, you know, getting above or just going further. It's like the national park thing, right? 90% of the people or 95, whatever, don't go 50 feet from their car or something like that. But if you can hike out a little bit, right, maybe bring the packing stuff, and that's a good way to avoid some of the crowds, right?
You can go that route. And, you know, one of the things we talk about is, well, if you're just starting out, also don't be afraid to fish the boat ramp. You'd be surprised, right? Because there's so many people that want to get away. Oh, you got to hike miles away. Well, at times you do, and at times that's just a fun thing to do, different water and explore. But when you're just getting going, there's no reason you shouldn't just walk down and swing that little run by the boat ramp or fish that water in close to the parking lot, because
people skip it.
A lot of people will just bypass that, right, and not even think about it. And I can't tell you how many places I've caught some really, really nice fish within eyeshot of the truck. So approach it both ways, but again, be flexible in your approach. You know, if there's a bunch of people there, okay, then maybe hike in and go a little farther. But if you see everyone just beelining it for the path, then fish it a little bit and see what's there.
Sure, that's cool. Do you see anybody?
Yeah, just flexibility in your approach. And being open to try different, and no one knows any better. So don't let that. Don't just assume everyone else knows something. Something different's going on.
Right. Yeah, it kind of exploring stuff. What do you find with you've got conventional and fly, do you see people kind of crossing over, you know, from, I guess, both? I mean, obviously you do it, a lot of people do. Is that something where you have somebody in either in conventional and you try to kind of provide, you know, education to those people to see the fly, or do you kind of, are they in that conventional and that's kind of where they are?
No, I've seen a lot of crossover, especially the last few years. And it's usually an interesting transition too, right? Most of us have probably started off, right, with the push button poles and bobber fishing with worms, and those that want to grow and expand have moved into fly fishing. See a lot of crossover from the conventional folks, which is cool. More so than the other way, right? I feel like most fly anglers have a foundation with spinning or casting rods, or have done it before, gone on trips, different things. But see a lot of good crossover. A lot of dealers too. We've got a lot of dealers around the country that have made that transition and brought in fly tackle, you know, rods, reels, things like that.
Yeah.
There's an easy connection there. And like I said, explaining just the movement of weight from a lure to a fly line, it seems to be a pretty easy connection for most anglers to pick up on and kind of understand, okay, well, this is how you cast this type of rod effectively. And as anglers, right, we're always looking for something different and cool and just another way to appreciate and enjoy the outdoors. And it's an easy connection. You know, I see that light up in their eyes pretty quickly if I'm talking to somebody at a show or at a dealer about something like that.
That's right. Let's talk a little bit on the rod lineup you guys have, and maybe we could start off with, you talked about kind of the Euro nymphing stuff. What would be, if you were, you know, thinking about, like, say, musky, do you guys have pretty much a rod for every species out there? Is it diversified like that?
Yeah, we have a fairly diverse lineup, a little over 100 SKUs, so 100 different models. You know, on the fly side, we do everything from a, you know, Euro nymph type specific rod, but also, you know, 7.5 foot two weight, so your small creek stream type of rod, all the way up to a 16 plus weight heavy duty offshore billfish fly rod,
right.
A lot in between. So we do have some technique specific rods, and we've got the Euro rods. We've got our BC big fly rods, which is your big saltwater fish, big freshwater predator style fish. You know, we still, in terms of action, we still try to design our rods to be fishing type rods, not overly fast, overly stiff. We want rods people could pick up and fish and cast, do a couple different techniques and have fun doing it. But we still, you know, focus on our price points. We want to have rods that people can afford to get into and grow within the family. Our price points, we try to keep as sound as possible. You know, that's big, the big marketing slang we've been pushing, really, you know, outside of the best rods for the money. Mm-hmm. As prices of everything goes up and everything in life gets more and more expensive, we still work really hard to try to keep our rods reasonably priced, affordable, but also a very high level of quality and performance.
Right. And the mix, I mean, yeah, definitely you guys have, like we're saying, for a beginner, we had that package, which I think it was, you know, under $200, right, for everything. Is that right?
Yep. Two rod and reel combo kits. We also have a what we kind of call more of a youth combo kit, and those are shorter rods, a 7 and 8 footer. But funnily enough, we call it the youth, you know, the bug launcher, the youth combo kit. But
yeah,
we've got a lot of folks that fish real tiny streams that love the little 7-foot rod. So,
yeah,
you know, as much as we want to try to put rods in different rod families and categories, you know, freshwater, saltwater, technique specific, one of the cool things about fly anglers, right? They'll find another cool use for a rod, and they'll find another way to play with it and have fun.
Fly fishing isn't just about the catch. It's about the journey, and having the right passion can make all the difference. Meet the Yellowstone 2 fly rod from Jackson Hole Fly Company. Their flagship offering is designed to elevate every moment on the water. Meticulously crafted with IM8 graphite, this versatile fast-action four-piece rod brings a fusion of strength, performance, and sensitivity, giving anglers precise control whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out. Dive into the world of fly fishing with equipment that's both reliable and reasonably priced. Elevate your journey. Experience the Yellowstone 2 difference. Shop now at jacksonholeflycompany.com. Picture this. You're casting your line into the pristine waters of the Togiak River, surrounded by untouched Alaskan wilderness. At Togiak River Lodge, the dream becomes a reality. Here, every cast brings a chance of a lifetime, battling salmon or reeling in that majestic rainbow trout. But it's not just the fish, it's the adventure. With Togiak's expert guides and exclusive access to over 30 miles of river, your fishing story is waiting to be written. And guess what? I'll be joining this summer too. Don't let this be the one that got away. Visit TogiakLodge.com right now. That's Togiak, T-O-G-I-A-K, Lodge, right now. And embark on your unforgettable journey. Remember, it's not just fishing, it's Togiak. I'm looking at the signature too. I think that's probably the baseline rod for somebody like a total beginner, that like your lowest priced option.
Yep, that's a good option too. It's now the signature 3. We did some cosmetic component updates to it for this 2024 and 2025 here. But it's a two-piece rod.
Oh, two-piece. Nice.
Two-weight up to a 10-weight. Yep, and we still have a lot of fans of the two-piece. And there's a lot of benefits to that if you have the ability to keep it rigged up or throw it in the car or truck or keep it in the boat.
Yeah, what is the benefit of the two-piece versus the four-piece?
Travel convenience. Materials these days, I mean, there's really not going to be a huge difference. Graphite and different things have grown and evolved so much. I mean, every couple of years I've got to update a rod series just because the materials.
Oh, right. Well, why would you get a two-piece rod if a four-piece rod kind of functions similarly? Seems like that would be.
Again, it's travel convenience. If you're not flying somewhere, if you don't have to pack it down.
Oh, right. Just the fact that four pieces is, yeah, I gotcha.
Keep it pretty simple. And it's a very popular guide rod, client rod around the country, really even around the world. Specifically that rod, because it's a little deeper loading, what we call more of a moderate action, right? So it's going to bend a little bit easier, load a little deeper. Customers can fish a variety of techniques on it very effectively, very efficiently. But yeah, it comes down to your travel convenience, packability, but still a soft spot for that two-piece rod.
Right. No, it is. And I think I still have a TFO rod that's two-piece. And I guess you don't think much because you think I'm always kind of traveling. and things like that. But, but you're right. It's like a two-piece rod makes a ton of sense because it's two pieces. It's quicker to put together, right, than putting four together.
Yep. Just try to make it easy and simple. And it's, again, another way we can offer a really selling price rod for people getting into it, or maybe this is a specialty rod, right? They're fishing some really small creeks, or they've got a drift boat, John boat, something like that. Or, you know, they're going salmon fishing in the Great Lakes, something like that. Need a heavy duty, simple rod that they're not going to fish a ton throughout the year, but also not going to break the bank if they wanted to try something a little different.
Gotcha. Let's keep it on the beginner kind of thing again. So if somebody is there and you were just going to tell them, hey, they're coming into it, they want to choose a rod, what are a few of those? What's your best advice or tips for that new person on finding the right rod?
Best advice is to try a couple different rods. You know, one of the benefits still of independent fly shops, but also fly shows, you know, claves, gatherings, things like that, is the ability to cast a couple different rods side by side. You know, I say there's a reason all these companies make a bunch of rods, different styles of rods, not just to make money. It's because everyone's going to have a little bit different personal preference. Casting strokes are going to be different. They're also going to change, right? So the ability to try a few different rods, do your best to ignore what's on the logo, what's on the label, and just cast a few different things to understand what fits your style, you know, fits your tempo, and you're going to enjoy as an angler, to me, is really the best advice to start. And again, figure out what your starting budget is, what's reasonable for you, and dial into the rod lengths and weights. How often do you think you're going to fish this type of technique or this type of water? Yeah, there's a number of do-it-all rods, but there's also some pretty specific rods out there, right? Different lengths, configurations. That's kind of weighing, how often am I going to do this? Am I going to throw streamers most of the time, or am I going to want a rod that I could throw a multi-fly rig, or, you know, hopper dropper, thing like that? Or am I going to be nymph fishing more, high sticking more? So there's some of that people should evaluate before picking either their first rod or when they expand or grow from that initial rod.
Yeah. And that's why typically, you know, the 9 foot five weight is not, you know, the all around rod. You're not going to fish steelhead with it, but it is a good, for the most part, if somebody's brand new, they don't know what to get, you know, that's a decent, you know, I guess, choice, right? Because you can fish all the trout. Yeah.
You can fish most of your freshwater. You'll have enough mass, enough grainage in that fly line, right? You could be pretty flexible in the size of flies you're going to throw. So yeah, definitely a great way to start. And then from there, you know, we usually recommend either a two or three rod weight difference, kind of spread it out.
All right.
Either lower or higher. Again, it gives you a little bit more flexibility, a little bit more coverage in terms of expanding your personal rod quiver.
Yeah. Do you like I always say like the odd or even, you know, the 5, 7, 9, or you more, if you had to choose, more of a 6, 8, 10 sort of, you know, series?
Ooh, that's a tough question.
Yeah.
As someone that's spoiled in this.
You have everything.
I have the ability to fish anything. I kind of like the odds. I fish a lot of 7s and a lot of 9s and a lot of 11 weights.
Uh-huh.
Something I'll probably pick up more and more.
Yep.
Tend to fish 7 weights, you know, more as my Western streamer type of rod, and, you know, 9 weights for striped bass or some bigger redfish, and the 11 weights for the real big fish, you know, sharks and smaller tuna, things like that. But again, you can't go wrong. And again, a 2 weight difference is just kind of a good starting point if you're looking to expand beyond that initial 5 weight.
Gotcha. And what is the I can't remember if we said it, but the muskie, we're getting ready to do a muskie trip. I'm not sure if you've been for muskie, but what would be a TFO rod that would be good for the muskie?
Beth's recommendation would be the BC Big Fly. That just stands for Blaine Chocolate. He's been one of our longtime TFO advisors.
Yep.
And he advises a number of other companies. And we had a original series that was kind of more freshwater specific, but as we've evolved this BC Big Fly, we wanted to just have a more serious predator style rod, both for fresh and saltwater. We do 3 models, an 8, 10, and 12 weight, and kind of a good 2 weight rod spread, but that'll cover just about everything. When it was during the development, he wanted a rod. He came to me and he's like, I really want a rod to throw this 14 inch serious fly. Well, that presents just a few design challenges, but we were able to come up with a rod that can really throw some of the largest musky and pike type flies.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty happy with how it turned out.
Yeah. Yeah. And what do you guys do when those big rods are tossing the big flies? How is that rod built differently than, say, a trout rod or something else?
Little bit different design idea. With this rod, we went with a little bit faster, stiffer style action. You're typically throwing big sinking lines, big heavy flies, But really the cool thing about this series was our handle configuration. So you'll notice, and if you go out to tflrods.com, you can have a little better idea of what I'm describing here. The handle, so the forward grip's going to be a little bit longer. So as you're casting, as you're fighting fish, you have a little bit more freedom in where you place your hand. Then moving down to the fighting butt, it's going to be an extended fighting butt. So originally the idea was, once you strip that fly and get that fly close to the boat, and people are making that figure eight or that circular fly motion, trying to get that last, you know, little enticing maneuver to draw in a big fish, that lower handle gives you a good little grip as you're putting, you know, as you're pointing that rod tip towards the water. But we also found with that extended fighting butt, putting it up against your wrist when you go to pick up that line, pick up that heavy fly, just gives you a little bit more leverage and just makes that whole process a little bit easier, a little bit more efficient. Again, especially when you're throwing a 12-inch, 14-inch fly and 700 grain line, 600 grain line, something crazy like that. So there's some handle designs that are a little bit different that you'll see. Some other companies have started to adapt that style as they've figured out some of the benefits, features and benefits of that. Make it a little bit different than your standard single-handed type of rod.
Gotcha. So this is like a longer butt. This wouldn't be necessarily a fighting butt. That's not the reason. And this is more for maneuvering the tweaking the fly, have the fly moving. Is that the case?
Yeah, maneuvering the fly, but then also just that added leverage in terms of picking up those heavy lines and being able to reposition them a little bit more efficiently. Yeah, it does give you a little bit more room. You know, that's probably another ancillary benefit of that is with that musky type of game, pike, I mean, even some heavy-duty saltwater, right? If you're fishing colder, nastier climates, you got a jacket on, you got a big pair of bibs on, gives you a little bit more freedom, gets that reel away from your body a little bit more, so you can, again, make everything a little bit more efficient and not slow down.
Yeah, so it is, yeah. So it definitely still is a fighting butt. That is a nice benefit of it, for sure.
Yep, still, again, it's an extended fighting butt. It's still IGFA compliant, but it's a little bit longer, gets you a little bit more room, and it's got a couple different pretty neat benefits to it.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, anything else on kind of the lineup? I know we haven't gone deep on this, but as far as maybe what's coming up or any changes you guys have or any other products you want to highlight here?
Absolutely. Exciting. Couple exciting things outside of the Euro Nymph Rod, which will be a summer introduction for us typically before or during the ICAST time, which is our big international conventional tackle specific show in Orlando, Florida. We'll also be introducing a freshwater fly rod series. So little higher end finish out, a little bit more refined blank, some unique models within that series. Not eliminating anything from the current TFO lineup, just exploring some more options, and playing around with some finish out opportunities, you know, different guides, different handle styles, things like that.
Yeah, gotcha. So no, I mean, basically the lineup you guys have covers everything. So it's not, you know, again, you don't have to come up with a new rod because you guys kind of have it covered. Is that the case? Or are you just, you're tweaking little things to make them a little bit kind of nicer, that sort of stuff?
Yeah, trying to tweak some rod series and not move away from our entry-level style rods and some really strong points for us, but pushing the envelope a little bit on components and look and finish out and just kind of seeing where that goes. I mean, the market seems to be growing in certain price categories, and you know, outside of tweaking some existing blanks, you know, that's a kind of a famous line for some of our advisors. There's only so many actions in the world.
Right.
You know, and then it really comes down to finish out and style and how you place it, how you describe it. So, yeah. You know, we've got a lot on the freshwater side, a lot on the saltwater side. So continuing to update those series and refresh things. And as new guides come out and new reel seats and new styles and looks, we'll continue to adapt the best we can. But again, not move away from our base and what we've always been trying to do.
Keep the base. That's sweet. And on ICAST, we might be there this year potentially, but what is it about ICAST, you know, that maybe is, how is it different than say some of the other shows out there?
So this is an industry only show. It's mainly conventional tackle. They've been growing the fly component as a crossover brand. You know, we've done both for many years. So it's a great opportunity to see a lot of our dealers in the Southeast and really around the world. You know, we have a lot of great conversations with our international distributors, and it's where most new tackle gets introduced for the year, and you know, we start our programs and release our new rods there, and it's quite a spectacle. We I set up 1,000-square-foot booth and build out 2 offices, and there'll be other companies there that have multi-level offices and buildings, and
oh really, you know,
people build little cabins on the show floor. It's quite a production.
Oh, that's wow,
really be seen. But again, it's an industry only show, and it really kicks off the buying season for most brands and most retailers.
Yeah, gotcha. And so, and the cabins are literally, they're on the show floor and they're bringing in structures and multi-story.
Yeah, building structures. Yeah, it's a I mean, it's a takes me about almost a full 2 days before the show to set everything up, and I don't, you know, we don't by any means have that elaborate of a production. There's a lot of companies that put some serious money and serious time into it.
Yeah, that's
retailers from all around the country, all around the world coming, and you know, it's a great opportunity. I spend a lot of time with suppliers, and you're seeing every company's new products and different materials and different things like that. So it's a pretty impressive.
How has it changed from? I know there was a period of time when when IFTD was part of it. There's still a strong fly, right? Don't they have a strong fly component there? Were you there when that kind of changed and that split off?
Yeah, I was. I'm going into my 12th.
Oh yeah, yeah.
You're ICAST there. Show overall. Oh now, wow, this summer.
You've been to every ICAST in 12 years.
Yep, and you know that was back when they moved too. So there was years ago from Vegas to Orlando. It's been in Orlando. I was there during the original IFTD component. That's since moved on, and coincidentally, I'm a board member at AFTA. A lot of reasons we've shifted that approach, and that type of footprint doesn't necessarily matter. But there still is a number of good crossover brands that do both. And we, although it is a conventional tackle show, we see a lot of retailers on our fly side, and it's good to reconnect to those people. And again, that helps us grow. You know, you've got a fly only shop. Well, maybe now they're considering bringing in some of our 3-piece spinning and casting travel rods, or they want some surf rods and vice versa. Right. You've got a freshwater bass specific account. Well, we want some combo kits now. Right. We're seeing a lot of interest on the fly side. So there's a lot of good.
Oh, right.
There's a lot of positive back and forth there that happens. And for the companies that do both, it's a good opportunity to get in front of retailers and talk about all your different product assortments.
That's right. And the retailers on the fly side, you have obviously the fly shops are a big one, the local fly shops, and then you have other retailers. On the conventional side, you don't really have as much of the local, or do you? I mean, you have tackle shops. Do you have a similar thing on the conventional side?
Well, absolutely. They're
good
brand awareness within the independent retailers. We still work with Sportsman's Warehouse, Shields, some of those what we call big box stores. We formerly worked with some of the other folks, no longer now. So I'm not going to mention their name, but
yeah,
it's definitely a growing aspect on the conventional product side. I mean, we're in several hundred independent fly shops around the country, and we're pretty confident with our brand awareness. But like anything, it takes some time. So conventional is growing and growing in a good place, just getting a lot of strong competition and a lot of brands out there that are doing really cool things and offering really great products. So,
yeah. Wow. Nice. Well, you know, as always here, you know, we can't touch on it all, but I think the cool thing is, Nick, is that we're doing some stuff. We're doing some really cool events around the country. So I'm hopeful that we will be able to, keep in touch. I had a couple of quick ones. We're going to take it out here with our listener shout out, and then I'll have a couple of random ones for you, and then we'll let you get out of here. Does that sound good to you?
Yeah, that sounds great.
Perfect. So the listener shout out today, this is a good one coming from Brandon Hudson. He said, he sent an email in, and he said, today was a notable day, he says, because I finished all the episodes in the year 2020. As of today, I've listened to every Wet Fly Swing episode except 64 and a few of 2019. Then he goes in to talk about how fortunate he was to attend this show with Jeff Liskey, this presentation in Indiana, and just what Jeff did, you know, helping him kind of with this stuff. So first of all, I want to give a shout out to Brandon for that amazing email. It just shows us, you know, all these episodes, even this one, you know, Nick, you know, 5 years from now, there's still going to be people out there listening to this, which is kind of cool. So shout out to Brandon. No,
you should be very proud of that.
Totally. No, we are. I think this is the sort of things that I told Brandon. I was like, man, this is definitely the stuff that keeps me going strong. So that's our listener shout out. So as far as kind of our random ones today, maybe let's start it off with just, you know, we've been kind of all over the place, but what would be, you know, a few takeaways from today? We talked about a little bit on rods, a little bit about on your book. Like if you want to give people two or three takeaways from today's conversation, what would those be?
Oh, spend some time. If you're interested in a rod, spend some time at a dealer, at a consumer focused show, and cast everything and find the tool that you need for the job.
Yep.
Spend some time preparing once you do get all your tackle set up, get your rods and reels, everything ready to go. You know, spend some time doing the research and getting your life together.
Right.
As it were, before you head out to the river. And then once you're done, spend some time making some mental notes or some hard paper notes, kind of evaluating yourself, right?
Yep.
Don't make it too business, too serious, but you know, evaluate yourself, and with that evaluation, right, you'll grow and learn some more effective ways to fish next time.
Perfect. Good. And what is, you know, obviously TFO is a big brand out there. What are some of your brands, maybe not the fly fishing brands, but some other brands out there you really love, or maybe what's one or two just other brands that you just find yourself using all the time, whether it's fishing or outdoors?
Oh, there's a lot of brands, and I don't want to leave anybody out. I mean, if you want to talk Fly Lines, Leaders, Tippet Material, you know, folks like Scientific Anglers and Cortland.
Actually, let's talk non-fly fishing. Like, what would be something else, you know, if you're outdoor, if you're on a heading out to your next fishing trip, what are some of the other, non-fly fishing?
Non-fly fishing?
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, I'm staring at about a half a dozen duffel bags from Patagonia.
There you go.
A couple bags from Filson. I'm a big, big Filson guy. They make some really cool things. You know, Extra Tough. I spend a lot of time, nasty cold weather on boats, but also, you know, barefoot and 90 degree temps. So Extra Tough's a hard one to not throw in my bag.
Yep.
I've been this show season, as it's warmed up and it's been appropriate, I've been wearing more and more of the most recent iteration of the Grundens flip flop. I mean, I think that's been a really killer product.
Which one is that?
It's their latest flip flop. It's got the C deck bottom. I forget the specific model.
Flip flop. So this is like a cool flip top. You can wear like on your boat, on the skiff or whatever.
Absolutely. Incredibly comfortable. You know, I spend a ton of time on concrete floors, unfortunately, and I've worn them quite a bit this year, and they've been great on my back, but they also clean off of that C deck bottom. They clean off really well.
Yeah.
Definitely something I've been wearing a lot of, and glad to be out of the cold weather shows and doing that deal. So back to flip flops and walking around barefoot.
That's right. How is it in Texas right now? You said, are you out of Houston?
I'm in Dallas proper.
Actually. Oh, in Dallas. Yeah. How's the weather out there today? What's it like this time of year? Kind of March.
A little gloomy and cloudy today. You know, we've got St. Patrick's Day tomorrow, and they block off a bunch of these streets. I'm hoping it's kind of nice. I'll have the grill going and a bunch of people over here, but hopefully into the 80s and 90s here with the next couple.
When is the time when you guys get to a point where, is there a time where you're really not going out because it's a little bit too hot out there?
No, I don't think there's a time.
There you go. So you don't have that. So you're
there'll be a certain time here, probably in the next couple of weeks, that I love having my windows open in my cabin office here. And there'll be a time where it gets about 10 in the morning, 11, where it's just too hot. You know, it starts to creep into the 90s. And I've got to shut the windows and turn the AC on. But that just makes for some better patio drinking later in the day.
Right. Yeah, that's a nice thing. Yeah, it seems like Texas has it all going. You know what I mean? It's got the weather. You know, it's got all that stuff. Have you been enjoying it since you made the move down?
Oh, absolutely. I still have a family place in Michigan, and I go back, unfortunately, December and January, right? So
typically
the worst time of the year. But yeah, I find it hard to believe. My blood's definitely changed being down here. And if it gets into the 50s and 60s, I get a little bit whiny. Right. I don't like getting cold like that. I know it sounds funny coming from a former steelhead angler myself, but
right. Yeah.
I prefer to be warm, and again, if I don't ever have to wear closed toed shoes again, I'd be fine. And
it's good. We're hoping to get, I think, a trip out there. We're going to be later this year, maybe early next year. I think we're going to be heading down that way, so that I'm excited to get out and get in the salt water and all that stuff. So,
absolutely. There's a lot of great opportunities down here, and don't let those 90 and 100 degree days fool you. You get down on the coast, you get a nice little breeze, and I mean, it's hard to beat even into the late fall, winter, when it's in the 80s and, you know, around Thanksgiving. Yeah, this is just great.
What do you think is your best, what's your favorite time of the year down there in your part of Texas?
Favorite time of the year for me is probably September into November. Like I said, even past Thanksgiving. Yeah, we get a lot of the winds here in the spring. So some of my surf fishing, some of the flat stuff kind of delays until summer. Summer is a great time, and that's one of those funny fishing times, right, where you could be fishing in the middle of the day, bright sun, and there's a bunch of reds moving around. There's a bunch of speckled trout, sharks, whatever. But that late fall is really quite a wonderful time. Again, you can wake up and it's in the low 70s and doesn't get much past the mid 80s, and you get nice weather, you know, up until almost Christmas time. And yeah, to be down here Christmas Eve and still wearing a t-shirt, so
yeah,
pretty privileged to have.
That's awesome. Cool. All right. Well, we'll send everybody out to, like we said at the start, tfo.rods.com if they have questions or want to, you know, I guess pick your brain. They could probably send you an email too if they have any questions. Does that sound good to you?
Absolutely. Simple email, nick@tfo.rods.com. Always happy to talk through email, or if people want to call the office, always happy to chat on the phone and get people into the sport. But as they delve more into it and are looking for some more specific rods, reels, different approaches, I'm always up and happy to talk about it.
Perfect. Awesome, Nick. Thanks for all your time and definitely the good work. We've been loving TFO for many years and everything you guys have going. So it's been fun connecting with you, and I appreciate all the information today.
Hey, absolutely. Thank you very much. Appreciate the time, and glad to be on.
there it is. Who doesn't love a little update on a rod company and to hear what's going on new and new products and a few tips along the way. If you're interested in heading out with us on the water, you can check in right now. We have some giveaways going all year. wetflyswing.com/giveaway. And if you are on Apple Podcasts right now, I would love it if you could follow the show on your app right now. In the upper right corner, there's a little plus sign. If you click that button, that will follow this podcast and you'll get updated automatically the next time our next episode goes live. All right, time to get on to the next one. I appreciate you for stopping by and I hope you enjoy that update with Nick. And I hope you have a great morning, a great afternoon, or a great evening, wherever in the world you are. And I appreciate you for stopping by today and checking out the show.